circle on the surface close to where the chip was turning. As he twisted the wire tight with the pliers that held these two grenades in place, he saw through the metal of the bridge the sunlight on the green slope of the mountain. It was brown 3 days ago, he thought. Out from the cool dark under the bridge, he leaned into the bright sun and shouted to Anselmo's bending face, "Give me the big coil of wire!" The old man handed it down. "For God's sake, don't loosen them any yet. This will pull them. I wish you could string them through. But with the length of wire you are using, it's okay," Robert Jordan thought, as he felt the cotter pins that held the rings that would release the levers on the hand grenades. He checked that the grenades lashed on their sides had room for the levers to spring when the pins were pulled. The wire that lashed them ran through under the levers. Then he attached a length of wire to one ring, wired it onto the main wire that ran to the ring of the outside grenade, paid off some slack from the coil, and passed it around a steel brace, and then handed the coil up to Anselmo. "Hold it carefully," he said. He climbed up onto the bridge, took the coil from the old man, and walked back as fast as he could pay out wire, toward where the sentry was slumped in the road, leaning over the side of the bridge and paying out wire from the coil as he walked. "Bring the sacks!" he shouted to Anselmo as he walked backwards. As he passed, he stooped down and picked up the submachine gun and slung it over his shoulder again. It was then, looking up from paying out wire, that he saw well up the road those who were coming back from the upper post. There were four of them, he saw, and then he had to watch his wire so it would be clear and not foul against any of the outer work of the bridge. Eladio was not with them. Robert Jordan carried the wire clear past the end of the bridge, took a loop around the last stanchion, and then ran along the road until he stopped beside a stone marker. He cut the wire and handed it to Anselmo. "Hold this, viejo," he said. "Now walk back with me to the bridge. Take up on it as you walk." "No, I will." At the bridge, he pulled the wire back out through the hitch so it now ran clear and unfouled to the grenade rings and handed it, stretching alongside the bridge but running quite clear, to Anselmo. "Take this back to that high stone," he said. "Hold it easily but firmly. Do not put any force on it. When thou pullest hard, hard, the bridge will blow. Comprendes?" "Yes." "Treat it softly, but do not let it sag so it will foul. Keep it lightly firm, but not pulling until thou pullest. Comprendes?" "Yes." "When thou pullest, really pull. Do not jerk." Robert Jordan, while he spoke, was looking up the road at the remainder of Pilar's band. They were close now, and he saw Primitivo and Rafael were supporting Fernando. He looked to be shot through the groin, for he was holding himself there with both hands, while the man and the boy held him on either side. His right leg was dragging, the side of his shoe scraping on the road as they walked him. Pilar was climbing the bank into the timber carrying three rifles. Robert Jordan could not see her face, but her head was up, and she was climbing as fast as she could.
"How does it go?" Primitivo called.
"Good. We're almost finished," Robert Jordan shouted back. There was no need to ask how it went with them. As he looked away, the three were on the edge of the road, and Fernando was shaking his head as they tried to get him up the bank.
"Give me a rifle here,"
Robert Jordan heard him say in a choky voice.
"No, hombre, we will get thee to the horses."
"What would I do with a horse?" Fernando said.
"I am very well here."
Robert Jordan did not hear the rest, for he was speaking to Anselmo.
"Blow if the tanks come," he said, "but only if they come onto it. Blow it if armored cars come, if they come onto it. Anything else, Pablo will stop."
"I will not blow it with thee beneath it."
"Take no account of me. Blow it if thou needest to. I fix the other wire and come back. Then we will blow it together."
He started running for the center of the bridge. Anselmo saw Robert Jordan run up the bridge, coil of wire over his arms, pliers hanging from one wrist, and the submachine gun slung over his back. He saw him climb down under the rail of the bridge and out of sight. Anselmo held the wire in his hand, his right hand, and he crouched behind the stone marker and looked down the road and across the bridge. Halfway between him and the bridge was the sentry, who had settled now closer to the road, sinking closer onto the smooth road surface as the sun weighed on his back. His rifle lying on the road, the bayonet fixed, pointed straight toward Anselmo. The old man looked past him along the surface of the bridge crossed by the shadows of the bridge rail to where the road swung to the left along the gorge and then turned out of sight behind the rocky wall. He looked at the far sentry box, with the sun shining on it,
and then conscious of the wire in his hand, he turned his head to where Fernando was speaking to Primitivo and the gypsy.
"Leave me here," Fernando said. "It hurts much, and there is much hemorrhage inside. I feel it in the inside when I move."
"Let us get thee up the slope," Primitivo said. "Put thy arms around our shoulders, and we will take thy legs."
"It is inutile," Fernando said. "Put me here behind a stone. I am as useful here as above."
"But when we go," Primitivo said.
"Leave me here," Fernando said. "There is no question of my traveling with this. Thus it gives one horse more. I am very well here. Certainly they will come soon."
"We can take thee up the hill," the gypsy said, "easily."
He was, naturally, in a deadly hurry to be gone, as was Primitivo, but they had brought him this far.
"Nay," Fernando said, "I am very well here. What passes with Eladio?"
The gypsy put his finger on his head to show where the wound had been.
"Here," he said, "after thee, when we made the rush."
"Leave me," Fernando said. Anselmo could see he was suffering much. He held both hands against his groin now, and put his head back against the bank, his legs straight out before him. His face was gray and sweating.
"Leave me now, please, for a favor," he said.
His eyes were shut with pain, the edges of the lips twitching.
"I find myself very well here."
"Here is a rifle and cartridges," Primitivo said.
"Is it mine?"
Fernando asked, his eyes shut.
"Nay, the Pilar has thine," Primitivo said. "This is mine." "I would prefer my own," Fernando said. "I am more accustomed to it."
"I will bring it to thee,"
the gypsy lied to him.
"Keep this until it comes."
"I am in a very good position here," Fernando said, "both for up the road and for the bridge."
He opened his eyes, turned his head, and looked across the bridge, then shut them as the pain came. The gypsy tapped his head and motioned with his thumb to Primitivo for them to be off.
"Then we will be down for thee," Primitivo said, and started up the slope after the gypsy, who was climbing fast.
Fernando lay back against the bank. In front of him was one of the whitewashed stones that marked the edge of the road. His head was in the shadow, but the sun shone on his plugged and bandaged wound, and on his hands that were cupped over it. His legs and his feet also were in the sun. The rifle lay beside him, and there were three clips of cartridges shining in the sun beside the rifle. A fly crawled on his hands, but the small tickling did not come through the pain.
"Fernando,"
Anselmo called to him from where he crouched, holding the wire. He had made a loop in the end of the wire and twisted it close so he could hold it in his fist.
"Fernando,"
he called again. Fernando opened his eyes and looked at him.
"How does it go?"
Fernando asked.
"Very good," Anselmo said. "Now in a minute we will be blowing it." "I am pleased. Anything you need me for, advise me,"
Fernando said, and shut his eyes again, and the pain lurched in him. Anselmo looked away from him and out onto the bridge. He was watching for the first sight of the coil of wire being handed up onto the bridge, and for the Inglés's sunburnt head and face to follow it as he would pull himself up the side. At the same time, he was watching beyond the bridge for anything to come around the far corner of the road. He did not feel afraid now at all, and he had not been afraid all the day. "It goes so fast, and it is so normal," he thought. "I hated the shooting of the guard, and it made me an emotion, but that is past now." How could the Inglés say that the shooting of a man is like the shooting of an animal? "In all hunting, I have had an elation and no feeling of wrong. But to shoot a man gives a feeling as though one had struck one's own brother when you are grown men. And to shoot him various times to kill him? Nay, do not think of that. That gave thee too much emotion, and thee ran blubbering down the bridge like a woman. That is over," he told himself, "and thou canst try to atone for it as for the others. But now thou hast what thou asked for last night coming home across the hills. Thou art in battle, and thou hast no problem. If I die on this morning, now it is all right." Then he looked at Fernando lying there against the bank with his hands cupped over the groove of his hip, his lips blue, his eyes tight shut, breathing heavily and slowly, and he thought, "If I die, may it be quickly. Nay, I said I would ask nothing more if I were granted what I needed for today, so I will not ask. Understand? I ask nothing. Nothing in any way. Give me what I asked for, and I leave all the rest according to discretion." He listened to the noise that came far away of the battle at the pass, and he said to himself, "Truly this is a great day. I should realize and know what a day this is." But there was no lift or any excitement in his heart. That was all gone, and there was nothing but a calmness. And now, as he crouched behind the marker stone with the looped wire in his hand, and another loop of it around his wrist, and the gravel beside the road under his knees, he was not lonely, nor did he feel in any way alone. He was one with the wire in his hand, and one with the bridge, and one with the charges the Inglés had placed. He was one with the Inglés still working under the bridge, and he was one with all of the battle, and with the Republic. But there was no excitement. It was all calm now, and the sun beat down on his neck and on his shoulders as he crouched, and as he looked up he saw the high, cloudless sky and the slope of the mountain rising beyond the river, and he was not happy, but he was neither lonely nor afraid. Up the hill slope, Bilar lay behind a tree watching the road that came down from the pass. She had three loaded rifles by her, and she handed one to Primitivo as he dropped down beside her. "Get down there," she said, "behind that tree. Thou, gypsy, over there," she pointed to another tree below. "Is he dead?" "Nay, not yet," Primitivo said. "It was bad luck," Pilar said. "If we had had two more, it need not have happened. He should have crawled around the sawdust pile. Is he all right there where he is?" Primitivo shook his head. "When the Inglés blows the bridge, will fragments come this far?" the gypsy asked from behind his tree. "I don't know," Pilar said, "but Augustine with the máquina is closer than thee. The Inglés would not have placed him there if it were too close." "But I remember with the blowing of the train, the lamp of the engine blew by over my head, and pieces of steel flew by like swallows." "Thou hast poetic memories," Pilar said. "Like swallows, joder, they were like wash boilers. Listen, gypsy, thou hast comported thyself well today. Now do not let thy fear catch up with thee."
"Well, I only asked if it would blow this far so I might keep well behind the tree trunk," the gypsy said.
"Keep it thus," Pilar told him. "How many have we killed?"
"Pues, five for us, two here. Canst thou not see the other at the far end? Look there, toward the bridge. See the box? Look, dost see?" He pointed. "Then there were eight below for Pablo. I watched that post for the Inglés."
Pilar grunted. Then she said violently and raging,
"What passes with that Inglés? What is he obscenitying off under that bridge? Vaya mandanga! Is he building a bridge or blowing one?"
She raised her head and looked down at Anselmo crouching behind the stone marker.
"Hey, viejo!" she shouted. "What passes with thy obscenity of an Inglés?"
"Patience, woman," Anselmo called up, holding the wire lightly but firmly. "He is terminating his work."
"But what in the name of the great whore does he take so much time about?"
"Es muy concienzudo,"
Anselmo shouted.
"It is a scientific labor."
"Ay, obscenity in the milk of science," Pilar raged to the gypsy. "Let the filth-faced obscenity blow it and be done."
"Maria,"
she shouted in her deep voice up the hill.
"Thy Inglés."
And she shouted a flood of obscenity about Jordan's imaginary actions under the bridge.
"Calm yourself, woman," Anselmo called from the road. "He is doing an enormous work. He is finishing it now." "The hell with it," Pilar raged. "It is speed that counts."
Just then, they all heard firing start down the road where Pablo was holding the post he had taken. Pilar stopped cursing and listened.
"Aye," she said. "Aye, aye. That's it."
Robert Jordan heard it as he swung the coil of wire up onto the bridge with one hand and then pulled himself up after it. As his knees rested on the edge of the iron of the bridge and his hands were on the surface, he heard the machine gun firing around the bend below. It was a different sound from Pablo's automatic rifle. He got to his feet, leaned over, passed his coil of wire clear, and commenced to pay out wire as he walked backwards and sideways along the bridge. He heard the firing, and as he walked he felt it in the pit of his stomach as though it echoed on his own diaphragm. It was closer now as he walked, and he looked back at the bend of the road, but it was still clear of any car, or tank, or men. It was still clear when he was halfway to the end of the bridge. It was still clear when he was three-quarters of the way, his wire running clear and unfouled, and it was still clear as he climbed around behind the sentry box, holding his wire out to keep it from catching on the ironwork. Then he was on the road, and it was still clear below on the road, and then he was moving fast backwards up the little washed-out gully by the lower side of the road, as an outfielder goes backwards for a long fly ball, keeping the wire taut, and now he was almost opposite Anselmo Stone, and it was still clear below the bridge. Then he heard the truck coming down the road, and he saw it over his shoulder just coming onto the long slope, and he swung his wrist once around the wire and yelled to Anselmo,
"Blow her!"
And he dug his heels in and leaned back hard onto the tension of the wire with a turn of it around his wrist, and the noise of the truck was coming behind, and ahead there was the road with the dead sentry and the long bridge and the stretch of road below, still clear, and then there was a cracking roar, and the middle of the bridge rose up in the air like a wave breaking, and he felt the blast from the explosion roll back against him as he dove on his face in the pebbly gully with his hands holding tight over his head. His face was down against the pebbles as the bridge settled where it had risen, and the familiar yellow smell of it rolled over him in acrid smoke, and then it commenced to rain pieces of steel. After the steel stopped falling, he was still alive, and he raised his head and looked across the bridge. The center section of it was gone. There were jagged pieces of steel on the bridge, with their bright, new, torn edges and ends, and these were all over the road. The truck had stopped up the road about 100 yards. The driver and the 2 men who had been with him were running toward a culvert. Fernando was still lying against the bank, and he was still breathing, his arms straight by his sides, his hands relaxed. Anselmo lay face down behind the white marking stone. His left arm was doubled under his head, and his right arm was stretched straight out. The loop of wire was still around his right fist. Robert Jordan got to his feet, crossed the road, knelt by him, and made sure that he was dead. He did not turn him over to see what the piece of steel had done. He was dead, and that was all. He looked very small dead, Robert Jordan thought. He looked small and gray-headed, and Robert Jordan thought, I wonder how he ever carried such big loads if that is the size he really was. Then he saw the shape of the calves and the thighs and the tight, gray herdsman's breeches and the worn soles of the rope-soled shoes, and he picked up Anselmo's carbine and the 2 sacks, practically empty now, and went over and picked up the rifle that lay beside Fernando. He kicked a jagged piece of steel off the surface of the road. Then he swung the 2 rifles over his shoulder, holding them by the muzzles, and started up the slope into the timber. He did not look back, nor did he even look across the bridge at the road. They were still firing around the bend below, but he cared nothing about that now. He was coughing from the TNT fumes, and he felt numb all through himself. He put one of the rifles down by Pilar where she lay behind the tree. She looked and saw that made 3 rifles that she had again. "You are too high up here," he said. "There's a truck up the road where you can't see it. They thought it was planes. You better get further down. I'm going down with Augustine to cover Pablo."
"The old one?"
she asked him, looking at his face. "Dead." He coughed again, rackingly, and spat on the ground.
"Thy bridge is blown, Inglés." Pilar looked at him. "Don't forget that."
"I don't forget anything," he said. "You have a big voice," he said to Pilar. "I have heard thee bellow. Shout up to the Maria and tell her that I am all right."
"We lost 2 at the sawmill," Pilar said, trying to make him understand.
"So I saw," Robert Jordan said. "Did you do something stupid?"
"Go and obscenity thyself, Inglés," Pilar said. "Fernando and Eladio were men too."
"Why don't you go up with the horses?" Robert Jordan said. "I can cover here better than thee."
"Thou art to cover Pablo."
"The hell with Pablo. Let him cover himself with mierda."
"Nay, Inglés. He came back. He has fought much below there. Thou hast not listened? He is fighting now, against something bad. Do you not hear?"
"I'll cover him. But obscenity all of you, thou and Pablo both."
"Inglés," Pilar said, "calm thyself. I have been with thee in this as no one could be. Pablo did thee a wrong, but he returned. If I had had the exploder, the old man would not have been killed. I could have blown it from here."
If, Pilar said. The anger and the emptiness and the hate that had come with the letdown after the bridge, when he had looked up from where he had lain and crouching seen Anselmo dead, were still all through him. In him, too, was despair from the sorrow that soldiers turn to hatred in order that they may continue to be soldiers. Now it was over. He was lonely, detached, and unelated, and he hated everyone he saw.
"If there had been no snow," Pilar said.
And then, not suddenly, as a physical release could have been, if the woman would have put her arm around him, say, but slowly and from his head, he began to accept it and let the hate go out. Sure, the snow. That had done it. The snow. Done it to others. Once you saw it again as it was to others, once you got rid of your own self, the always ridding of self that you had to do in war, where there could be no self, where your self is only to be lost. Then, from his losing of it, he heard Pilar say,
"Sordo."
"What?" he said.
"Sordo."
"Yes," Robert Jordan said. He grinned at her, a cracked, stiff, too-tightened facial tendoned grin. "Forget it. I was wrong. I am sorry, woman. Let us do this well and all together. And the bridge is blown, as thou sayest."
"Yes. Thou must think of things in their place."
"Then I go now to Augustine. Put thy gypsy much farther down so that he can see well up the road. Give those guns to Primitivo, and take this machina. Let me show thee."
"Keep the machina," Pilar said. "We will not be here any time. Pablo should come now, and we will be going."
"Rafael," Robert Jordan said, "come down here with me. Here, good. See those coming out of the culvert? There, above the truck? Coming toward the truck? Hit me one of those. Sit. Take it easy." The gypsy aimed carefully and fired, and as he jerked the bolt back and ejected the shell, Robert Jordan said, "Over. You threw against the rock above. See the rock dust? Lower by 2 feet. Now, careful. They're running. Good. Sigue tirando."
"I got one,"
the gypsy said. The man was down in the road halfway between the culvert and the truck. The other two did not stop to drag him. They ran for the culvert and ducked in. "Don't shoot at him," Robert Jordan said. "Shoot for the top part of a front tire on the truck. So if you miss, you'll hit the engine." "Good." He watched with the glasses. "A little lower." "Good. You shoot like hell. Mucho. Mucho. Shoot me the top of the radiator. Anywhere on the radiator. Thou art a champion. Look. Don't let anything come past that point there. See?"
"Watch me break the windshield in the truck,"
the gypsy said happily. "Nay, the truck is already sick," Robert Jordan said. "Hold thy fire until anything comes down the road. Start firing when it is opposite the culvert. Try to hit the driver. That you should all fire then," he spoke to Pilar, who had come farther down the slope with Primitivo. "You are wonderfully placed here. See how that steepness guards thy flank?"
"That you should get about thy business with Augustine," Pilar said. "Desist from thy lecture. I have seen terrain in my time."
"Put Primitivo farther up there," Robert Jordan said. "There, see, man? This side of where the bank steepens?"
"Leave me," said Pilar. "Get along, Inglés. Thou and thy perfection. Here there is no problem."
Just then, they heard the planes. Maria had been with the horses for a long time, but they were no comfort to her, nor was she any to them. From where she was in the forest, she could not see the road, nor could she see the bridge, and when the firing started, she put her arm around the neck of the big, white-faced bay stallion that she had gentled and brought gifts to many times when the horses had been in the corral and the trees below the camp. But her nervousness made the big stallion nervous, too, and he jerked his head, his nostrils widening at the firing and the noise of the bombs. Maria could not keep still, and she walked around, patting and gentling the horses and making them all more nervous and agitated. She tried to think of the firing not as just a terrible thing that was happening, but to realize that it was Pablo below with the new men and Pilar with the others above, and that she must not worry nor get into a panic, but must have confidence in Roberto. But she could not do this, and all the firing above and below the bridge, and the distant sound of the battle that rolled down from the pass, like the noise of a far-off storm, with a dried, rolling rattle in it, and the irregular beat of the bombs, was simply a horrible thing that almost kept her from breathing. Then later she heard Pilar's big voice from away, below on the hillside, shouting up some obscenity to her that she could not understand. And she thought, "Oh God, no, no. Don't talk like that with him in peril. Don't offend anyone and make useless risks. Don't give any provocation." Then she commenced to pray for Roberto quickly and automatically as she had done at school, saying the prayers as fast as she could and counting them on the fingers of her left hand, praying by tens of each of the two prayers she was repeating. Then the bridge blew, and one horse snapped his halter when he rose and jerked his head at the cracking roar, and he went off through the trees. Maria caught him finally and brought him back, shivering, trembling, his chest dark with sweat, the saddle down, and coming back through the trees, she heard shooting below, and she thought, I cannot stand this longer. I cannot live not knowing any longer. I cannot breathe, and my mouth is so dry. And I am afraid, and I am no good, and I frighten the horses, and only caught this horse by hazard, because he knocked the saddle down against a tree, and caught himself kicking into the stirrups, and now as I get the saddle up, oh God, I do not know. I cannot bear it. Oh, please have him be all right, for all my heart and all of me is at the bridge. The Republic is one thing, and we must win is another thing, but, oh, sweet blessed Virgin, bring him back to me from the bridge, and I will do anything thou sayest ever. Because I am not here. There isn't any me. I am only with him. Take care of him for me, and that will be me, and then I will do the things for thee, and he will not mind. Nor will it be against the Republic. Oh, please forgive me, for I am very confused. I am too confused now. But if thou takest care of him, I will do whatever is right. I will do what he says and what you say. With the two of me I will do it. But this now, not knowing, I cannot endure. Then the horse tied again, she with the saddle up now, the blanket smoothed, hauling tight on the cinch, she heard the big, deep voice from the timber below.
Maria! Maria! Thy inglés is all right. Hear me? All right. Sino elad.
Maria held the saddle with both hands and pressed her cropped head hard against it and cried. She heard the deep voice shouting again, and she turned from the saddle and shouted, choking.
Yes! Thank you.
Then choking again.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
When they heard the planes, they all looked up, and the planes were coming from Segovia, very high in the sky, silvery in the high sky, their drumming rising over all the other sounds.
Those, Pilar said. There has only lacked those.
Robert Jordan put his arm on her shoulders as he watched them. Nay, woman, he said, those do not come for us. Those have no time for us. Calm thyself.
I hate them.
Me too. But now I must go to Augustine. He circled the hillside through the pines, and all the time there was the throbbing, drumming of the planes, and across the shattered bridge on the road below, around the bend of the road, there was the intermittent hammering fire of a heavy machine gun. Robert Jordan dropped down to where Augustine lay in the clump of scrub pines behind the automatic rifle, and more planes were coming all the time.
What passes below?
Augustine said.
What is Pablo doing? Doesn't he know the bridge is gone?
Maybe he can't leave.
Then let us leave. The hell with him.
He will come now if he is able, Robert Jordan said. We should see him now.
I have not heard him, Augustine said. Not for 5 minutes. No. There. Listen. There he is. That's him.
There was a burst of the spot-spot-spotting fire of the cavalry submachine gun. Then another. That's the bastard, Robert Jordan said. He watched still more planes coming over in the high, cloudless blue sky, and he watched Augustine's face as he looked up at them. Then he looked down at the shattered bridge and across to the stretch of road which still was clear. He coughed and spat and listened to the heavy machine gun hammer again below the bend. It sounded to be in the same place that it was before.
And what's that?
Augustine asked.
What the unnameable is that?
It has been going since before I blew the bridge, Robert Jordan said. He looked down at the bridge now, and he could see the stream through the torn gap where the center had fallen, hanging like a bent steel apron. He heard the first of the planes that had gone over now, bombing up above at the pass, and more were still coming. The noise of their motors filled all the high sky, and looking up, he saw their pursuit, minute and tiny, circling and wheeling high above them.
I don't think they ever crossed the lines the other morning, Primitivo said. They must have swung off to the west and then come back. They could not be making an attack if they had seen these.
Most of these are new, Robert Jordan said. He had the feeling of something that had started normally and had then brought great
outsized, giant repercussions. It was as though you had thrown a stone, and the stone made a ripple, and the ripple returned, roaring and toppling as a tidal wave. Or as though you shouted, and the echo came back in rolls and peals of thunder, and the thunder was deadly. Or as though you struck one man, and he fell, and as far as you could see, other men rose up, all armed and armored. He was glad he was not with Goltz up at the pass. Lying there, by Augustine, watching the planes going over, listening for firing behind him, watching the road below where he knew he would see something, but not what it would be, he still felt numb with the surprise that he had not been killed at the bridge. He had accepted being killed so completely that all of this now seemed unreal. "Shake out of that," he said to himself. "Get rid of that. There is much, much, much to be done today." But it would not leave him, and he felt consciously all of this becoming like a dream. "You swallowed too much of that smoke," he told himself. But he knew it was not that. He could feel solidly how unreal it all was through the absolute reality, and he looked down at the bridge and then back to the sentry lying on the road, to where Anselmo lay, to Fernando against the bank, and back up the smooth brown road to the stalled truck, and still it was unreal. "You better sell out your part of you quickly," he told himself. "You're like one of those cocks in the pit where nobody has seen the wound given, and it doesn't show, and he is already going cold with it." "Nuts," he said to himself. "You are a little groggy is all, and you have a letdown after responsibility is all. Take it easy." Then Augustine grabbed his arm and pointed, and he looked across the gorge and saw Pablo. They saw Pablo come running around the corner of the bend in the road. At the sheer rock where the road went out of sight, they saw him stop and lean against the rock and fire back up the road. Robert Jordan saw Pablo, short, heavy, and stocky, his cap gone, leaning against the rock wall and firing the short cavalry automatic rifle, and he could see the bright flicker of the cascading brass hulls as the sun caught them. They saw Pablo crouch and fire another burst. Then, without looking back, he came running, short, bow-legged, fast, his head bent down straight toward the bridge. Robert Jordan had pushed Augustine over, and he had the stock of the big automatic rifle against his shoulder and was sighting on the bend of the road. His own submachine gun lay by his left hand. It was not accurate enough for that range. As Pablo came toward them, Robert Jordan sighted on the bend, but nothing came. Pablo had reached the bridge, looked over his shoulder once, glanced at the bridge, and then turned to his left and gone down into the gorge and out of sight. Robert Jordan was still watching the bend, and nothing had come in sight. Augustine got up on one knee. He could see Pablo climbing down into the gorge like a goat. There had been no noise of firing below since they had first seen Pablo. "You see anything up above? On the rocks above?" Robert Jordan asked. "Nothing." Robert Jordan watched the bend of the road. He knew the wall just below that was too steep for anyone to climb, but below it eased and someone might have circled up above. If things had been unreal before, they were suddenly real enough now. It was as though a reflex lens camera had been suddenly brought into focus. It was then he saw the low-bodied, angled snout and squat green, gray, and brown splashed turret with the projecting machine gun come around the bend into the bright sun. He fired on it, and he could hear the spang against the steel. The little Whippet tank scuttled back behind the rock wall. Watching the corner, Robert Jordan saw the nose just reappear. Then the edge of the turret showed, and the turret swung so that the gun was pointing down the road.
"It seems like a mouse coming out of his hole," Augustine said. "Look, Inglés."
"He has little confidence," Robert Jordan said.
"This is the big insect Pablo has been fighting," Augustine said. "Hit him again, Inglés."
"Nay, I cannot hurt him. I don't want him to see where we are." The tank commenced to fire down the road. The bullets hit the road surface and sung off, and now they were pinging and clanging in the iron of the bridge. It was the same machine gun they had heard below.
"Cabrón," Augustine said. "Is that the famous tanks, Inglés?"
"That's a baby one."
"Cabrón, if I had a baby bottle full of gasoline, I would climb up there and set fire to him. What will he do, Inglés?"
"After a while, he will have another look."
"And these are what men fear," Augustine said. Look, Inglés. He's re-killing the sentries.
Since he has no other target, Robert Jordan said, do not reproach him. But he was thinking, sure, make fun of him. But suppose it was you, way back here in your own country, and they held you up with firing on the main road. Then a bridge was blown. Wouldn't you think it was mined ahead, or that there was a trap? Sure you would. He's done all right. He's waiting for something else to come up. He's engaging the enemy. It's only us, but he can't tell that. Look at the little bastard. The little tank had nosed a little farther around the corner. Just then, Augustine saw Pablo coming over the edge of the gorge, pulling himself over on hands and knees, his bristly face running with sweat.
Here comes the son of a bitch, he said.
Who?
Pablo.
Robert Jordan looked, saw Pablo, and then he commenced firing at the part of the camouflaged turret of the tank where he knew the slit above the machine gun would be. The little tank whirred backwards, scuttling out of sight, and Robert Jordan picked up the automatic rifle, clamped the tripod against the barrel, and swung the gun with its still hot muzzle over his shoulder. The muzzle was so hot it burned his shoulder, and he shoved it far behind him, turning the stock flat in his hand.
Bring the sack of pans, and my little machina, he shouted, and come running.
Robert Jordan ran up the hill through the pines. Augustine was close behind him, and behind him, Pablo was coming.
Pilar!
Jordan shouted across the hill.
Come on, woman!
The three of them were going as fast as they could up the steep slope. They could not run any more because the grade was too severe, and Pablo, who had no load but the light cavalry submachine gun, had closed up with the other two.
And thy people?
Augustine said to Pablo, out of his dry mouth.
All dead, Pablo said.
He was almost unable to breathe. Augustine turned his head and looked at him.
We have plenty of horses now, Inglés,
Pablo panted.
Good,
Robert Jordan said. The murderous bastard, he thought. What did you encounter?
Everything,
Pablo said. He was breathing in lunges.
What passed with Pilar?
She lost Fernando and the brother.
Eladio,
Augustine said.
And now?
Pablo asked. I lost Anselmo.
There are a lot of horses,
Pablo said.
Even for the baggage.
Augustine bit his lip, looked at Robert Jordan, and shook his head. Below them, out of sight through the trees, they heard the tank firing on the road and bridge again. Robert Jordan jerked his head.
What passed with that?
He said to Pablo. He did not like to look at Pablo, nor to smell him, but he wanted to hear him.
I could not leave with that there, Pablo said. We were barricaded at the lower bend of the post. Finally it went back to look for something, and I came. What were you shooting at the bend?
Augustine asked, bluntly. Pablo looked at him, started to grin, thought better of it, and said nothing.
Did you shoot them all?
Augustine asked. Robert Jordan was thinking, keep your mouth shut. It is none of your business now. They have done all that you could expect and more. This is an intertribal matter. Don't make moral judgments. What do you expect from a murderer? You're working with a murderer. Keep your mouth shut. You knew enough about him before. This is nothing new. But you dirty bastard, he thought. You dirty, rotten bastard. His chest was aching with climbing as though it would split after the running, and ahead now through the trees he saw the horses.
Go ahead,
Augustine was saying.
Why do you not say you shot them?
Shut up, Pablo said. I have fought much today and well. Ask the Inglés.
And now get us through today, Robert Jordan said, for it is thee who has the plan for this.
I have a good plan, Pablo said. With a little luck, we will be all right.
He was beginning to breathe better.
You're not going to kill any of us, are you?
Augustine said.
For I will kill thee now.
Shut up, Pablo said. I have to look after thy interest, and that of the band. This is war. One cannot do what one would wish.
Cabron,
said Augustine.
You take all the prizes.
Tell me what thou encountered below, Robert Jordan said to Pablo.
Everything, Pablo repeated.
He was still breathing as though it were tearing his chest, but he could talk steadily now, and his face and head were running with sweat, and his shoulders and chest were soaked with it. He looked at Robert Jordan cautiously to see if he were really friendly, and then he grinned.
Everything, he said again. First we took the post, then came a motorcyclist, then another, then an ambulance, then a camion, then the tank, just before thou didst the bridge. Then? The tank could not hurt us, but we could not leave, for it commanded the road. Then it went away, and I came.
And thy people? Augustine put in, still looking for trouble.
Shut up. Pablo looked at him squarely, and his face was the face of a man who had fought well before any other thing had happened. They were not of our band. Now they could see the horses tied to the trees, the sun coming down on them through the pine branches, and them tossing their heads and kicking against the botflies, and Robert Jordan saw Maria, and the next thing he was holding her, tight, tight, with the automatic rifle leaning against his side, the flash cone pressing against his ribs, and Maria saying,
Thou, Roberto, oh thou!
Yes, rabbit, my good, good rabbit, now we go.
Art thou here truly?
Yes, yes, truly,
oh thou!
He had never thought that you could know that there was a woman if there was battle, nor that any part of you could know it, or respond to it, nor that if there was a woman, that she should have breasts small, round, and tight, against you through a shirt, nor that they, the breasts, could know about the two of them in battle. But it was true, and he thought, good. That's good. I would not have believed that, and he held her to him once hard, hard, but he did not look at her, and then he slapped her where he never had slapped her, and said,
Mount, mount, get on that saddle, guapa.
Then they were untying the halters, and Robert Jordan had given the automatic rifle back to Augustine and slung his own submachine gun over his back, and he was putting bombs out of his pockets into the saddlebags, and he stuffed one empty pack inside the other and tied that one behind his saddle. Then Pilar came up, so breathless from the climb she could not talk, but only motioned. Then Pablo stuffed three hobbles he had in his hand into a saddlebag, stood up and said,
¿Qué tal, woman?
And she only nodded, and then they were all mounting. Robert Jordan was on the big gray he had first seen in the snow of the morning of the day before, and he felt that it was much horse between his legs and under his hands. He was wearing rope-soled shoes, and the stirrups were a little too short. His submachine gun was slung over his shoulder, his pockets were full of clips, and he was sitting reloading the one used clip, the reins under one arm, tight, watching Pilar mount into a strange sort of seat on top of the duffel lashed onto the saddle of the buckskin.
"Cut that stuff loose, for God's sake," Primitivo said. "Thou wilt fall, and the horse cannot carry it."
"Shut up," said Pilar. "We go to make a life with this."
"Canst ride like that, woman?" Pablo asked her, from the Guardia Civil saddle on the great bay horse.
"Like any milk peddler," Pilar told him. "How do you go, old one?"
"Straight down, across the road. Up the far slope and into the timber where it narrows."
"Across the road?"
Augustine wheeled beside him, kicking his soft-heeled canvas shoes against the stiff, unresponding belly of one of the horses Pablo had recruited in the night.
"Yes, man, it is the only way," Pablo said.
He handed him one of the lead ropes. Primitivo and the gypsy had the others.
"Thou canst come at the end if thou will, Inglés," Pablo said. "We cross high enough to be out of range of that máquina, but we will go separately, and riding much, and then be together when it narrows above."
"Good," said Robert Jordan. They rode down through the timber toward the edge of the road. Robert Jordan rode just behind Maria. He could not ride beside her for the timber. He caressed the gray once with his thigh muscles, and then held him steady as they dropped down fast and sliding through the pines, telling the gray with his thighs as they dropped down what the spurs would have told him if they had been on level ground.
"Thou," he said to Maria, "go second as they cross the road. First is not so bad, though it seems bad. Second is good. It is later that they are always watching for." "But thou?"
"I will go suddenly. There will be no problem. It is the places in line that are bad." He was watching the round, bristly head of Pablo, sunk in his shoulders as he rode, his automatic rifle slung over his shoulder. He was watching Pilar, her head bare, her shoulders broad, her knees higher than her thighs, as her heels hooked into the bundles. She looked back at him once and shook her head.
"Pass the Pilar before you cross the road," Robert Jordan said to Maria.
Then he was looking through the thinning trees, and he saw the oiled dark of the road below, and beyond it the green slope of the hillside. "We are above the culvert," he saw, "and just below the height where the road drops down straight toward the bridge in that long sweep. We are around 800 yards above the bridge.
That is not out of range for the Fiat in that little tank, if they have come up the bridge.
Maria, he said, pass the Pilar before we reach the road, and ride wide up that slope.
She looked back at him but did not say anything. He did not look at her except to see that she had understood.
Comprendes?
He asked her. She nodded.
Move up, he said.
She shook her head.
Move up!
Nay, she told him, turning around and shaking her head.
I go in the order that I am to go.
Just then, Pablo dug both his spurs into the big bay, and he plunged down the last, pine-needled slope and crossed the road in a pounding, sparking of shod hooves. The others came behind him, and Robert Jordan saw them crossing the road and slamming on up the green slope and heard the machine gun hammer at the bridge. Then he heard a noise come swish, crack, boom. The boom was a sharp crack that widened in the cracking, and on the hillside he saw a small fountain of earth rise with a plume of gray smoke.
Swish, crack, boom.
It came again, the swishing like the noise of a rocket, and there was another up-pulsing of dirt and smoke farther up the hillside. Ahead of him, the gypsy was stopped beside the road in the shelter of the last trees. He looked ahead at the slope, and then he looked back toward Robert Jordan.
Go ahead, Raphael,
Robert Jordan said.
Gallop, man!
The gypsy was holding the lead rope with the pack horse, pulling his head taut behind him.
Drop the pack horse and gallop, Robert Jordan said.
He saw the gypsy's hand extended behind him, rising higher and higher, seeming to take forever as his heels kicked into the horse he was riding and the rope came taut, then dropped, and he was across the road, and Robert Jordan was kneeing against a frightened pack horse that bumped back into him as the gypsy crossed the hard, dark road, and he heard his horse's hooves clumping as he galloped up the slope.
Weesh, crack!
The flat trajectory of the shell came, and he saw the gypsy jink like a running boar as the earth spouted the little black and gray geyser ahead of him. He watched him galloping, slow and reaching now, up the long green slope, and the gun threw behind him and ahead of him, and he was under the fold of the hill with the others.
I can't take the damned pack horse, Robert Jordan thought, though I wish I could keep the son of a bitch on my off side. I'd like to have him between me and that 47mm they're throwing with. By God, I'll try to get him up there anyway.
He rode up to the pack horse, caught hold of the hackamore, and then, holding the rope, the horse trotting behind him, rode 50 yards up through the trees. At the edge of the trees he looked down the road past the truck to the bridge. He could see men out on the bridge, and behind it looked like a traffic jam on the road. Robert Jordan looked around, saw what he wanted finally, and reached up and broke a dead limb from a pine tree. He dropped the hackamore, edged the pack horse up to the slope that slanted down to the road, and then hit him hard across the rump with the tree branch.
"Go on, you son of a bitch," he said,
and threw the dead branch after him as the pack horse crossed the road and started up the slope. The branch hit him, and the horse broke from a run into a gallop. Robert Jordan rode 30 yards farther up the road. Beyond that, the bank was too steep. The gun was firing now with the rocket whish and the cracking, dirt-spouting boom.
"Come on, you big gray fascist bastard," Robert Jordan said to the horse,
and put him down the slope in a sliding plunge. Then he was out in the open, over the road that was so hard, under the hooves he felt the pound of it come up all the way to his shoulders, his neck and his teeth, onto the smooth of the slope, the hooves finding it, cutting it, pounding it, reaching, throwing, going, and he looked down across the slope to where the bridge showed now at a new angle he had never seen. It crossed in profile now, without foreshortening, and in the center was the broken place, and behind it on the road was the little tank, and behind the little tank was a big tank, with a gun that flashed now yellow bright as a mirror, and the screech as the air ripped apart seemed almost over the gray neck that stretched ahead of him, and he turned his head as the dirt fountained up the hillside. The pack horse was ahead of him, swinging too far to the right, and slowing down, and Robert Jordan, galloping, his head turned a little toward the bridge, saw the line of trucks halted behind the turn that showed now clearly as he was gaining height, and he saw the bright yellow flash that signaled the instant whish and boom, and the shell fell short, but he heard the metal sailing from where the dirt rose. He saw them all ahead in the edge of the timber, watching him, and he said,
"Arre, caballo! Go on, horse!"
and felt his big horse's chest surging with the steepening of the slope, and saw the gray neck stretching and the gray ears ahead, and he reached and patted the wet gray neck, and he looked back at the bridge and saw the bright flash from the heavy, squat, mud-colored tank there on the road, and that he did not hear any wish, but only a banging, acrid, smelling clang like a boiler being ripped apart, and he was under the gray horse, and the gray horse was kicking, and he was trying to pull out from under the weight. He could move all right. He could move toward the right, but his left leg stayed perfectly flat under the horse as he moved to the right. It was as though there was a new joint in it, not the hip joint, but another one that went sideways like a hinge. Then he knew what it was all right, and just then the gray horse kneed himself up, and Robert Jordan's right leg, that had kicked the stirrup loose just as it should, slipped clear over the saddle and came down beside him, and he felt with his two hands of his thigh bone where the left leg lay flat against the ground, and his hands both felt the sharp bone and where it pressed against the skin. The gray horse was standing almost over him, and he could see his ribs heaving. The grass was green where he sat, and there were meadow flowers in it, and he looked down the slope across to the road and the bridge and the gorge and the road and saw the tank and waited for the next flash. It came almost at once with again no wish, and in the burst of it, with the smell of the high explosive, the dirt clods scattering, and the steel whirring off, he saw the big gray horse sit quietly down beside him, as though it were a horse in a circus. And then, looking at the horse sitting there, he heard the sound the horse was making. Then Primitivo and Augustine had him under the armpits, and were dragging him up the last slope, and the new joint in his leg let it swing any way the ground swung it. Once a shell whished close over them, and they dropped him and fell flat, but the dirt scattered over them, and the metal sung off, and they picked him up again. And then they had him up to the shelter of the long draw in the timber where the horses were, and Maria, Pilar, and Pablo were standing over him. Maria was kneeling by him and saying,
"Roberto, what hast thou?"
He said, sweating heavily,
"The left leg is broken, guapa." "We will bind it up," Pilar said. "Thou canst ride that."
She pointed to one of the horses that was packed.
"Cut off the load."
Robert Jordan saw Pablo shake his head, and he nodded at him.
"Get along," he said. Then he said, "Listen, Pablo, come here."
The sweat-streaked, bristly face bent down by him, and Robert Jordan smelt the full smell of Pablo.
"Let us speak," he said to Pilar and Maria. "I have to speak to Pablo."
"Does it hurt much?" Pablo asked. He was bending close over Robert Jordan.
"No, I think the nerve is crushed. Listen, get along. I am mucked, see? I will talk to the girl for a moment. When I say to take her, take her. She will want to stay. I will only speak to her for a moment."
"Clearly there is not much time," Pablo said.
"Clearly." "I think you would do better in the Republic," Robert Jordan said.
"Nay, I am for Gredos."
"Use thy head."
"Talk to her now," Pablo said. "There is little time." "I am sorry thou hast this, Inglés."
"Since I have it," Robert Jordan said. "Let us not speak of it, but use thy head. Thou hast much head. Use it."
"Why would I not?" said Pablo. "Talk now fast, Inglés. There is no time."
Pablo went over to the nearest tree and watched down the slope, across the slope, and up the road across the gorge. Pablo was looking at the gray horse on the slope with true regret on his face, and Pilar and Maria were with Robert Jordan, where he sat against the tree trunk.
"Slit the trouser, will thee?" he said to Pilar.
Maria crouched by him and did not speak. The sun was on her hair, and her face was twisted as a child's contorts before it cries, but she was not crying. Pilar took her knife and slit his trouser leg down below the left-hand pocket. Robert Jordan spread the cloth with his hands and looked at the stretch of his thigh. 10 inches below the hip joint there was a pointed, purple swelling, like a sharp-peaked little tent, and as he touched it with his fingers, he could feel the snapped-off thigh bone tight against the skin. His leg was lying at an odd angle. He looked up at Pilar. Her face had the same expression as Maria's.
"Anda," he said to her.
"Go." She went away with her head down without saying anything, nor looking back, and Robert Jordan could see her shoulders shaking.
"Guapa," he said to Maria, and took hold of her two hands. "Listen, we will not be going to Madrid."
Then she started to cry,
No, Guapa, don't, he said. Listen, we will not go to Madrid now, but I go always with thee, wherever thou goest. Understand?
She said nothing and pushed her head against his cheek with her arms around him.
Listen to this well, Rabbit, he said.
He knew there was a great hurry, and he was sweating very much, but this had to be said and understood.
Thou wilt go now, Rabbit, but I go with thee. As long as there is one of us, there is both of us. Do you understand?
Nay, I stay with thee.
Nay, Rabbit, what I do now I do alone. I could not do it well with thee. If thou goest, then I go too. Do you not see how it is? Whichever one there is both.
I will stay with thee.
Nay, Rabbit, listen. That people cannot do together. Each one must do it alone. But if thou goest, then I go with thee. It is in that way that I go too. Thou wilt go now, I know, for thou art good and kind. Thou wilt go now for us both.
But it is easier if I stay with thee, she said. It is better for me.
Yes, therefore go for a favor. Do it for me, since it is what thou canst do.
But you don't understand, Roberto. What about me? It is worse for me to go.
Surely, he said, it is harder for thee. But I am thee also now.
She said nothing.
He looked at her, and he was sweating heavily, and he spoke now, trying harder to do something than he had ever tried in all his life.
Now you will go for both of us, he said. You must not be selfish, Rabbit. You must do your duty now.
She shook her head.
You are me now, he said. Surely thou must feel it, Rabbit.
Rabbit, listen, he said. Truly thus I go too. I swear it to thee. She said nothing.
Now you see it, he said. Now I see it is clear. Now thou wilt go.
Good.
Now you are going.
Now you have said you will go.
She had said nothing.
Now I thank thee for it. Now you are going well and fast and far, and we both go in thee.
Now put thy hand here. Now put thy head down. Nay, put it down. That is right.
Now I put my hand there.
Good. Thou art so good.
Now do not think more.
Now art thou doing what thou should.
Now thou art obeying, not me, but us both. The me in thee.
Now you go for us both, truly.
We both go in thee now.
This I have promised thee.
Thou art very good to go, and very kind.
He jerked his head at Pablo, who was half looking at him from the tree, and Pablo started over. He motioned with his thumb to Pilar.
We will go to Madrid another time, Rabbit, he said, truly.
Now stand up and go, and we both go.
Stand up. See?
No, she said, and held him tight around the neck. He spoke now still calmly and reasonably, but with great authority.
Stand up, he said. Thou art me too now. Thou art all there will be of me. Stand up.
She stood up slowly, crying, and with her head down. Then she dropped quickly beside him, and then stood up again, slowly and tiredly, as he said,
Stand up, Guapa.
Pilar was holding her by the arm, and she was standing there.
Vámonos, Pilar said. Dost lack anything, Inglés?
She looked at him and shook her head.
No, he said, and went on talking to Maria. There is no goodbye, Guapa, because we are not apart. That it should be good in the Gredos. Go now. Go good.
Nay, he spoke now still calmly and reasonably, as Pilar walked the girl along. Do not turn around.
Put thy foot in.
Yes, thy foot in. Help her up, he said to Pilar. Get her in the saddle.
Swing up now.
He turned his head, sweating, and looked down the slope, then back toward where the girl was in the saddle with Pilar by her, and Pablo just behind.
Now go, he said. Go.
She started to look around.
Don't look around, Robert Jordan said. Go.
And Pablo hit the horse across the crupper with a hobbling strap, and it looked as though Maria tried to slip from the saddle, but Pilar and Pablo were riding close up against her, and Pilar was holding her, and the three horses were going up the draw. Roberto! Maria turned and shouted.
Let me stay! Let me stay!
I am with thee, Robert Jordan shouted.
I am with thee now. We are both there. Go!
Then they were out of sight around the corner of the draw,
and he was soaking wet with sweat and looking at nothing. Augustine was standing by him.
"Do you want me to shoot the Inglés?" he asked, leaning down close. "Quieres? It is nothing."
"No hace falta," Robert Jordan said. "Get along. I am very well here."
"Me cago en la leche que me han dado," Augustine said.